Dear listeners, hello and thank you for joining us for the 242nd edition of Sudbury News Talk magazine. My name is Michelle Mandry and I will be your presenter today. If you are a regular listener, you will know that presenters usually suggest a topic for contributors to write to. And on this occasion, that topic is keys. As ever, our contributors have delivered an assortment of articles. Some are funny, others insightful, a few unexpected, but I'm sure you will agree that all are entertaining. To start us off, and hitting the nail on the head, certainly for me, here is Jackie McSweeney.
Well, hello again. Hi, it's me, Jackie, and I'm going to talk about keys. Keys and lost keys. Let's talk about something small, simple, yet incredibly powerful. Keys. A key is a symbol of access. With a key, you can open doors, my other favourite topic, start engines, unlock safes, or even hearts, metaphorically speaking. But keys also have an incredible superpower. They can disappear. And when they do, chaos begins. I'm sure I'm not alone in saying, I've lost my keys more times than I can count. There's that moment of panic. You pack your pockets, you check the same bag 5 times. Then you begin to key dance, circling around the room, muttering to yourself. That routine starts. Step 1, check the usual place. Step 2, check the second usual place. Step 3, convince yourself you've been robbed. Step 4, blame a loved one or a pet. Step 5, check the fridge, just in case. Step 6, bargaining with the universe. Please God, help me find my keys. Okay, if I find my keys in the next 60 seconds, I will become a better person. I will eat kale, I will meditate, I will finally organise the garage. What do you want me to do? Do you know, I once found my keys inside the microwave. I've no explanation for this. I wasn't heating them up. They weren't leftovers. I think I blacked out and time travelled for 5 minutes. Once you do finally find them, you realise they were right in front of you the whole time. Hiding in plain sight. But here's the thing. Losing keys is never just about keys. It's about time, it's about stress, it's about the fragility of routine. Because the moment you lose them, everything stops. You're locked out, literally and figuratively. It's a metaphor for life. Sometimes we're so busy searching for the things that we don't realise they're already with us. Or we're just forgetful. Honestly, it's probably that second one. In a way, keys teach us life lessons. They remind us to slow down, to stay organised, and sometimes to laugh at ourselves. Who knew that something barely bigger than a coin could hold so much power? There are all kinds of keys, not just the ones made of metal. A good conversation can be a key to connection. An idea can be a key to innovation. Forgiveness can be a key to healing. And curiosity, the key to learning. And when we lose those kinds of keys, the ability to speak honestly, to think creatively, or to open up to others, that's when we feel truly locked out of what matters. So my challenge to you is to take care of your keys, all of them. Put the physical ones somewhere you'll remember, but more importantly, don't misplace the emotional, intellectual, and relational keys that open doors in your life. Because in the end, life is about finding the right key at the right time, and maybe, just maybe, helping someone else find theirs. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. You relate well the heart-sinking realisations locking yourself up brings in a practical and a personal sense. Now, as you know, we like a liberal interpretation here at Sovereign News Talk. So with that in mind, here's Margaret Hibble to relate a story from her youth. It's read to us today by Margaret King.
When I saw that this month's topic was keys, spelt K-E-Y-S, I tried hard to find a suitable story to write about. Then I thought maybe I could use the word keys, spelt Q-U-A-Y-S. This led me to the Key Theatre in Sudbury. A few years ago, on a backstage tour of the theatre, I saw some photos lining the walls of one of the corridors. To my surprise, I found that I was looking at a black and white photograph of myself. This led me down memory lane to my short stage career. I joined Sudbury Dramatic Society in the late 1950s, after I left school. The photo was of the cast of Night Must Fall, a psychological thriller by Emlyn Williams. I played the part of Dora the maid. We rehearsed in a room behind the Black Boy Hotel, now called the Lady Elizabeth Hotel. I recall that during the play, I had to let out a blood-curdling scream. I struggled at first to scream loud enough, but I knew I'd cracked it when the local bobby appeared at the door asking what on earth was going on. The last part I played was Meg in Little Women in 1962. My lasting memory of Little Women was that I had to perform my first stage kiss, which I found as difficult as my previous scream. Throughout my time with Sudbury Dramatic Society, we performed on the stage at the Victoria Hall in Prince Street. It closed as a theatre when the Key Theatre opened in the 1970s. I remember the dressing rooms being behind and below the stage. They were cold and damp, with paint peeling off the walls. Not very glamorous. My stage career took me from call boy to prompt to understudy, then small parts, mainly maids, then eventually leading to better parts, finally ending with Little Women's Meg. I still have all the scripts, programmes and photos from my short stage career, and I have fond memories of those times many years ago. I am now going to add a short addendum to Margaret's story. This is me. After reading Margaret's story, a long-held memory of mine resurfaced. Way back in the 1950s, when I was probably about 11 years old, my mother took me to see an amateur production of Emlyn Williams's Night Must Fall in the local WI Hall, a venue long since gone. Was this the one featuring Margaret as the maid? It was scary, and at the time, I had no idea of psychological thrillers. In later years, I did wonder if my mother had any concept of the content either. If you research the 1964 film of the play with Albert Finney in the starring role, it will come as no surprise to find that it received an X certificate, completely unsuitable for children.
Thank you, Margaret Hibble. How startling it must have been to spot yourself on the Keys Wall of Fame. But not half so startling as it must have been for the residents around Birkett's Lane. Thank you too to Margaret King for reading, and also for that little extra where she may or may not have seen Margaret playing and screaming her head off. Now, John King is here with the kind of conversation repeated countless times in countless places the world over.
It had been a good walk, we both agreed, as I searched in my pockets for my front door key. Ideal walking, a variety of scenery, and only two styles. "Have you got the key?" I said to Margaret. "No, you took it." More searching, deep into the backpack, without success. The lock is a 5-litre mortise deadlock, generally recommended for the house entrance doors by the insurance companies because of their security, now patently obvious. To activate the lock, we needed the wretched key, one that will lift the levers and allow the tenant to slide clear of the mortise. There is no other way, short of breaking and entering a nauseating notion. On the wall of the porch, there's a key safe, but it's so long since I used it, I'm not quite sure I can remember the code. I begin to feel hot and uneasy and in need of a cup of tea. It's becoming far more desperate. "I think," she says, and she's usually right, "that you plonked it in the car door pocket when we got back from the walk." Ah, yes, perhaps I did. And after a quick check of the car, she was once again to be proved correct. Relief and a nice cup of tea. Many of us have probably an image in our minds of a bunch of blacksmith forged keys on a large ring hanging from the waist of a jailer. In fact, locks and their associated keys have been around for a very long time. Most hotels now use electronic car keys. In fact, the last hotel I went to used car keys, but the opening reader was actually not on the door, but on the wall. Many office locks are numeric, and safes have been that way for many years. Keys are used for motorised vehicles, although many now have keyless entry. I don't like that. It seems to be a gift of the car thieves, and it's disconcerting as you walk away. Is the door locked? I suppose it's my age. I have been used to trying the door handle regularly. More concerning are some other use of keys. I'm thinking of situations where you need at least two key holders. This could be a big high security vault, but more sinisterly, the arming and launching of nuclear rockets and bombs. Very pertinent at present. But there are other types of keys. Actually, I'm using a keyboard to type this. But I'm thinking of non-physical keys. Keys that unlock memories and emotions. They are very powerful keys. These keys could be a tune, or a song, a smell, or if you prefer, a fragrance, or a physical thing like a location or building. Here are some examples. When my father was dying, I recall that on two occasions that I motored in to see him, my car radio was playing the Cranberries' Dream. The tune is rather melancholy, and now whenever I hear that song, I'm immediately transported to that very sad time. The smell of a privet hedge takes me back to the summer garden of my infant school, and of course at that age you are the right height to garner the maximum smell. Campions and willow herbs, when first appearing each year, give me memories of my Auntie Hetty. She took me for walks and we would press flowers. I still have some. The scent of glass cleaning fluid, or glasses, remind me of a particular security officer, as I always smelt of that. Hollyhocks, freshly bloomed in their splendid array of pastels, bring to mind Auntie May, who lived in Leyston. On a short stay there, when I was about 8, I remember hollyhocks all along the front of the house. It was like a fairyland for me at that age, for our house fronted a busy street. Many locations not regularly frequented are full of memories when I do occasionally visit them. So you see, there are all sorts of keys, and I'm sure you all have your own set. It struck me that religions often request to find a path and a key to the afterlife. We'll never know whether we found that one until much later in time.
Thank you, John. The relief of finding a key when you think you've lost it and actually being able to gain entry to your house is almost worth the stress, but not quite. But you're absolutely right about those audio-visual sensual cues that remind you of people, places, times. One of mine is Build Me Up, Buttercup which when I hear it on the radio, it never fails to remind me of a good friend who passed away about 5 years ago now. Every time, and you know, you'd think you'd get a bit tired of it, but I haven't yet. So, no, thank you. That was lovely. So, now I'm very pleased to introduce this evening's guest. On a return visit, Rachel Taylor is here to bring us up to date with all that's happening with Suffolk Community Library's online books. Rachel.
Thank you so much for inviting me back. Really appreciate the chance to come back and talk on this amazing magazine. Suffolk Community Libraries is what we are now named. We have moved back to the council control from being Suffolk Libraries for the past dozen years. The customer will notice no change. There should be nothing that you need to worry about. In fact, for the staff, there's not a lot of change. A few logos here and there, and some email name changes. But apart from that, everything will continue as you've always enjoyed it. The libraries will stay open, the books will be there, you can borrow them, 20 books at a time, if you wish to stagger out with 20 books at a time, up to 3 weeks. Do remember to renew them, very important. But as said, I've come here today to talk about our e-books and e-audio books, which are available through a couple of publishers. So we use BorrowBox and Libby. These are apps that you add to your phone or your device, and through them you can access literally thousands of books online. These are books that you can either read physically on your device, or you can listen to them, let somebody else take that brunt of describing to you all the things that happen in the books. Fantastic for journeys, fantastic for doing jobs around the home, and fantastic for lying back, putting your feet up, especially in the hot summer weather. I also wanted to talk to you about how important it is to keep your library card up to date, because completely unconnected with our move to being under the Suffolk County Council, both BorrowBox and Libby have stopped working if your library card has expired. So please come down to Sudbury Library or whichever library it is that you visit most, or call us online, or indeed call the help desk. Renew your library card. Make sure that detail is up to date. It is, to coin a phrase, the key to your online success. But I wish to offer a small story of my own from many, many years ago when I worked in London. I worked in a large bookstore right in the centre of London, Tottenham Court Road, and I lived in South London, about an hour's journey away. One evening, I closed the door, I left the shop, I took the tube, I took another tube, I got home, and it wasn't until about 11 o'clock that night that I suddenly thought, did I set the alarm? And I thought, that's a pretty serious thing to not set the alarm. I am going to have to go back to central London. So I walked along the dark streets. I got into the first tube. I got into the second tube. I arrived in central London. It is now midnight. And I walked down Tottenham Court Road, where people were sitting in doorways and lying around and smoking various things that they shouldn't be. And I got to our shop. And I stepped over the couple of people who were huddled in the doorway of said shop. And I put my key in the door, and the door handle opened. I hadn't even locked the shop. I had literally left the shop door unlocked for all that time. Of course, I pretended to fiddle around with the key. I went inside, I set the alarm, I came out very quickly and carefully locked that door and set off home to arrive home at a ridiculous hour of the morning. The point of this story, and the reason I wanted to tell you this, was that a library card can be the key to something, and Sudbury Library opens 7 days a week. But the important thing to remember is sometimes you don't need a key. Sometimes the door is open and all you have to do is push it and you can walk right in.
Thank you so much, Rachel. I really appreciate you coming to talk to us today. I really enjoyed the story that you finished up with. It was very unexpected and highly dramatic, and I was just so amazed by the whole drama of it. And thank you also for alerting us to the fact that people need to renew their library cards. We've just been speaking for the listeners at home about the number of people who've been coming in because they've found that their online ebooks are not working for them. So it's really important to make sure that if you are having trouble, that you just, you know, the first thing to think is it that your card needs renewing? So thanks very much again, Rachel, for that. Moving on, here it is, this month's quiz. Number one, in the nursery rhyme, how many bags of wool did the black sheep have in total? Number two, with which sea is the Wash connected with? Number three, what is a dried plum called? Number four, what kind of animal inspired Robert the Bruce to try again and again? Number five, what was the name of the volcano of Java that exploded in 1883, making the loudest noise in recorded history? Number six, of which country is Valletta the capital? Number seven, which US TV series featured investigators Mulder and Scully? Number eight, according to the proverb, every cloud has a silver what? Number nine, from which animal does venison come? And number 10, what does a milliner make or sell? And I'll be back with the answers later. Our next contributor is Margaret King to tell us all about a key family member.
Where a key or a lock might have helped. Firstly, a confession. This is not really about keys, although, as you will hear, one could have helped. I want to tell you Dottie's story. Dottie is my daughter's cat. She lives in Somerset. Born around 3 years ago, she had a most inauspicious beginning. Along with four other tiny mewing newborn kittens, she was dumped in a Yeovil alleyway. A walker, probably a dog walker, it's always a dog walker, found them and duly informed the relevant rescue people. Flash forward a few weeks and, when fully weaned, jabbed, chipped, etc., she became the family's new cat. A much longed for replacement for Coco, who, after 14 long years, had sadly transferred to cat heaven. Dottie was small, with pointy ears, a black coat liberally interspersed with ginger tufts or dots, and a perpetual eyes wide open staring expression. So she was christened Dottie. Utterly spoilt and cherished from day one, the house was filled with appropriate cat toys, beds and resting places. However, once she found her feet, Dottie realised that the back garden fence was relatively easy to climb over and into a very large, unkempt meadow, simply teeming with wildlife. Her favourites were mice, of course, shrews, and once even a toad. Oh dear, she was obviously going to be that sort of cat. She had cultivated a skill which, in the future, was possibly to prove propitious. Thus she settled into her chosen routine, sleeping for long sessions, prowling in the early morning, and closely attaching herself to my daughter, whom she followed everywhere. Last August, during our family visit, Dottie, then aged about 2, was in full evidence, enjoying her usual pursuits. We left Bath on Wednesday, August the 14th, and my daughter Caroline told me that she had booked Dottie in for a routine JABS appointment with the vet for the Friday, August the 16th. Now, I do need to say that the vet surgery is a good 3 miles away in Midsummer Norton, and it transpired that Dottie's enjoyment of the car trip, having been bundled into the cat carrier cum cage, was less than zero. Her nigh-on hysterical cries and pitiful moans punctuated the entire journey. I have since then seen the offending carrier with its buckle-like fastness at one end. No way was it as secure as the sealed cat box of Schrödinger's hypothetical cat, where keys and locks would doubtlessly have been employed. Not so here. On arrival, as my daughter approached the door of the vet's, the carrier's clasp buckled, the door sprang open, and Dottie leapt out with the speed of light. Gone in a flash. Searching, calling, coaxing, all were unsuccessful. She had completely vanished. Needless to say, every possible effort was made to retrieve her. By evening, she was starring on social media, on Facebook, on posters, and on leaflets which were distributed throughout the streets around the vicinity of the surgery. Now, this could not have come at a worse time, as the following week was hectic, commencing the very next day with my son-in-law's rather raucous 50th birthday celebrations. Then a long-anticipated trip to London to see Taylor Swift, and finally a few days' holiday in Copenhagen. By the end of August, still no news of Dottie, occasionally a false sighting. September came and went, October, November, December. It was so sad to see the little Dottie bauble dutifully hung on the Christmas tree. We all thought of her many times during those cold, miserable months of winter. Come the spring, and John and I travelled down to Bath on the train for a pre-Easter family visit. It was April the 4th, and circumstances meant a short while in Bath before a family member could come and pick us up. Thus a quick coffee and cake was planned. As we stood outside Bath station, waiting to cross the road to a little cafe we know, the mobile phone rang. The usual rubbish, I thought, until we heard the granddaughter's excited voice saying, "We think we have found Dottie." What? Where? When? How? The questions came thick and fast. It was such a beautifully hot spring day that many customers at the Midsummer Norton Wetherspoons were enjoying their food and drink sitting outside in, as I later saw, the rather uncharismatic astroturfed pub garden. Dottie was amongst them, scavenging for bits of fish and chips. Fortunately, also there was a lady customer, a cat lover and a follower of Facebook's Lost and Found's pet site. She was absolutely certain that she recognised her, so she proceeded to ring my daughter, whose legs apparently turned to jelly upon hearing this news. By the time we reached the family home, Dottie had been collected, this time in a securely fastened carrier, and was well and truly installed, having been pampered and well fed with special treats and her very favourite cat milk. It transpired that she had been prowling around the pub, which I have to say is a fair way from the vet surgery and across a busy high street, for 2 to 3 days. But the big mystery is why? Where had she been for 8 long months? A £75 checkup at the vet's a couple of days later resulted in an excellent report. She was, and I quote, in tip-top condition. Who had looked after her so well, and why did it stop? Questions to which I doubt we shall ever find the answers. Suffice to say that via a succession of unknown love, kindness, acute observation, and a large measure of good luck, Dottie has once again found the key to her own home.
Thank you, Margaret. If our listeners pay close attention, they may just be able to hear you purring with relief. Next, we have Richard Fawcett sharing his tips for remembering the right keys. Richard.
Keys play a particular part in my life and have done for years. Have you ever left the house, turned the key in the door, walked away, then wondered whether you'd brought the key or even turned it in the lock? Or turned the key then after a few paces or even halfway down the street or further, turn back to check? And have you noticed that this compulsive behaviour doesn't fade, that in fact it grows stronger? So if your door key begins as the solution to a problem, i.e. going out without a thought, it soon becomes a problem in its own right. Surely this must be paranoia. Well, it's not, I imagine, what Thomas Edison actually meant by saying, I have not failed 10,000 times. I have successfully discovered 10,000 ways that will not work. But I suggest we can detect a similar compulsive obsession at work. How to cure it? Like many people, I find myself turning for assistance to the Greek goddess Mnemosyne, mother of the 9 muses and goddess of memory, she who gives us the words memory and mnemonic. I recalled 2 mnemonics as a young musician to help me remember the names of notes on the treble clef. The spaces form the word F-A-C-E, face. And the lines we were taught give rise to the mnemonic, every good boy deserves favour. We were a boys' school, and no doubt those learning cello or viola or girls had their own mnemonics. And I have stood many a time in front of my home, inserting and turning the key while muttering the tune and words of, for example, Hickory Dickory Dock. But music, of course, has its own use of key, with 2 meanings, at least in English. First, the working parts of a keyboard, the mechanism by which, for example, a piano acts to produce sound. And second, adherence of the sound, i.e. the music, to at least one of the major or minor scales of which much music over the centuries has been built. One of my first thoughts about Michelle's topic for this present newsletter was modulation, the changing of key, and particularly to unexpected and often truly astonishing effect. 3 moments from the works of celebrated individuals of the late 18th and early 19th century came to my mind. Perhaps my favourite of all Beethoven's works is his 4th piano concerto in G major. The piano speaks first, with what at the time was an astonishing gesture, being totally on its own and relatively reticent. The strings echo this, but in B, not G. before introducing an entirely new and haunting idea in A minor. Nothing flashy or virtuoso about this concerto's opening, but it is utterly gripping. In his Fifth Symphony, as familiar a piece as any from the period, the glorious outburst of sound in C major, that is the fourth and final movement, is preceded by a passage of mysterious and rising excitement in C minor. The third example I have in mind is from the music of one to whom there are few who do not bend the knee, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. There is a staggering passage in his keyboard concerto K503 when the maestro changes both the key and the tempo, commonplace in especially the typical final rondo movements of concertos at the time. But more than that, however, he actually does both simultaneously, or so it seems, because he actually only appears to do both at the same time. The complete wonder being that, in fact, neither the tempo nor the key alter at all. That's Wolfgang Amadeus for you.
Thank you, Richard. I hope you enjoyed Richard's own little modulation there when he switched keys in the middle. You don't get anything past us, Richard. A short but sweet contribution now from Julie Thompson, who cannot be with us today.
Now, the subject of keys really had me stumped. All that kept going over and over in my mind was that 1993 track by Urban Cookie Collective, I've Got the Key, I've Got the Secret. But as I don't have any secrets, well, ones I'm prepared to share with the News Talk audience, that didn't get me anywhere. Then I remembered those keys that the bride always used to get on her wedding day. They were usually made of plastic, coated in a silver-coloured coat of something called black velvet, and they were given by well-wishers when the bride left the church and before the photographs were taken. When I looked this up to check my facts, I discovered it wasn't keys after all, but lucky horseshoes. So another failure on the key theme. There was that time when, just after moving to our new house, where the previous owners had left us all the keys lined up in a key safe, each with their own typed-up key fob, so we knew which ones to use in which lock, we went out to go to the DIY store and on the way home stopped off to see the bluebells at Upper Houses in Bulmer. When we got back home, the shed key that my husband had in his pocket was missing. I rang the DIY store, but to no avail, so I joined the Bulmer Facebook page and put on a post asking for help in finding them. It didn't take long for a post to appear with a photograph of our key with its fob and the words shed key on it with a description of where to find it. For those that have been listening to my previous articles, I wanted to share with you that the sale of my parents' house has just gone through, yesterday in fact, and I handed over the keys. Oh, I don't believe it. An actual key-related story. Julie, you must try harder.
Thank you, Julie. I enjoyed picturing your new-to-you house keys all lined up and perfectly labelled. I wonder if they look just as tidy today. I imagine they do. And now for the quiz answers. The score in the studio was pretty good today, so let's see how you got on at home. In the nursery rhyme, the black sheep had 3 bags of wool in total. Number 2, the Wash is connected with the North Sea. Number 3, A dried plum is called a prune. Number 4, Robert the Bruce was inspired to try and try again by a spider. Number 5, the name of the volcano of Java that exploded in 1883, making the loudest noise in recorded history, was Krakatoa. The film name, East of Java, is incorrect. It just sounded better. It's actually West of Java, Krakatoa. Anyway, moving on. Number 6. Valletta is the capital of Malta. Number 7. Mulder and Scully featured in the US TV series The X-Files, of which I was an avid fan back in the day. Number 8. According to the proverb, every cloud has a silver lining. Number 9, venison comes from deer. And number 10, a milliner makes or sells hats. So I hope you did as well as we did. And now we move on to two familiar voices. One in the writing and one in the reading. Toby Jacobs takes us back to his youth and electronics of the fun kind. Ken Watkins has kindly recorded the piece for us.
They say that if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. However, if you can recall the 1970s, then you most definitely were. Power cuts, a 3-day week, and not forgetting the winter of discontent. 5,000 miles away, across the Atlantic, life was somewhat different. In Sunnyvale, California, two friends, Ted Dabney and Nolan Bushell, formed the Atari Video Games Company. November 1972 saw the release of Pong, which is regarded as one of the first commercial arcade machines. It was a simple electronic version of tennis, set in a freestanding wooden cabinet. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Pacific, the Japanese were starting to get in on the act. Masters of mimicry, their consumer electronics industry was booming. 1978 saw the Taito Corporation release Space Invaders. This heralded the start of what came to be described as arcade mania. Other classic titles followed, including Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. There is an apocryphal tale that America had a nationwide shortage of 10-cent coins due to the rise of video game machines. My first experience of these was in a pub in Hampshire. We were on a family outing with friends, and they told us we just had to see this new game called Space Invaders. The cabinet was over against the far wall, and as one of our hosts began to play, so began my love affair that lasted for the next 6 years. I soon acquired encyclopedic knowledge of every location of the game in my hometown. Chinese takeaways, minicab offices, kebab shops. They all got in on the craze for shooting aliens and munching yellow dots around a maze. They were seen as a good way of drawing people into their premises. Now picture the scene, a record store in South London, playing the latest in Jamaican reggae. The owner had installed a machine in there, and it was right on my way home from school. My friends and I would crowd around the screen, accompanied by a soundtrack of heavy dub. There ensued a curious juxtaposition of adolescent schoolboys and righteous Rastafarians. But it was all very amicable. Never-ending hunt took me all over. During the summer, the local fun fair arrived on Mitcham Common. The enticing sounds carried over the rooftops, and when I finally got wind of their arrival, I knew it meant only one thing. Arcades. These were always situated on the edge of the fair, in a sort of hinterland between the generators and caravans. Upon entering, there was always a man in a booth, ready and willing to give you change for your notes. As I spent my way around the machines, I felt like there were eyes upon me, but I was never quite sure where they resided. Amusement arcades, fun fairs, and carnivals have always had that curious mix of fun and menace. In the 1950s, pinball parlours were frequented by teddy boys, and in American movies, you could always be guaranteed trouble in the local pool hall. However, the nearest I got to danger was having tomato ketchup poured into my school bag while engrossed in playing the latest machine at the local cafe. What a great excuse I had, though, for my maths teacher. Amusement arcades have featured prominently in films such as Big, The Lost Boys, and War Games. The Who also famously used pinball as a backdrop to their seminal rock opera, Tommy. However, as the 1980s progressed, the rise of home video game systems spelt the end of arcade mania. It was game over, as the screen would proudly display. We now have smartphones with more processing power in them than a whole arcade. But I think we've also lost something. The thrill of the hunt, the slightly seedy locations, and the pleasure of having a pocket full of 10p coins. The old machines, though, have lived to fight another day. They're highly collectible now and look rather good in the living room, next to the cheese plant.
Thank you, Toby, for another really evocative piece going back to the 70s and 80s and your formative years. I learn something new every time. And thank you to Ken Watkins for voicing Toby's words. And finally, it's my pleasure to read for our final contributor today, as a fun night out ends with a tricky situation for Susan Robson. When I read that this month's theme was keys, I initially couldn't think of anything of interest, and then I recalled two funny incidents that happened many years ago. The first occurred when my husband and I, and our two boys, then aged around 10 and 7, arrived home after a day out, only to realise that neither of us had our front door key. All the windows and the back patio doors were locked, and we had no way to gain access. Then our youngest noticed that the downstairs toilet window was slightly ajar, and he said, "I can get in there, Mum." And he was rather small for his age. We thought we could probably achieve it. So we lifted him up onto the dustbin, opened the window as wide as it would go, and between us, we literally fed him head first through the little window where he landed on top of the toilet seat. He was then able to open the door for us. What a star. It was like feeding a letter through a narrow letterbox. Many years later, my husband and I and two friends came home after a night out, rather merry, to discover that we had lost the front door key. All the windows were closed except for a bedroom window, but there was no way we could possibly get up there. It was a cold night and none of us wanted to stand outside for long. Nobody volunteered, and as the men were in no fit state anyway, it was left to myself and my friend. Eventually, feeling rather brave or foolish, I agreed that I would have a go. My friend helped me up onto the dustbin, then I stepped onto the porch and pulled myself up onto the window ledge. I opened the window and fell head first onto the bed and then made my way downstairs. I omitted to mention that I was wearing my party dress and 3-inch stilettos. I had to keep my shoes on or I wouldn't have been able to reach the window. Thankfully, the next day we had a call from the venue to say the key had been found. After writing about this, I started thinking about how many phrases we use in everyday life which contain the word key. I love the phrase skeleton key, which is listed as a key where the serrated edges have been removed in such a way that all its essential parts have been reduced. So down to the bare bones. We have keys to open safes and doors and music boxes and keys to wind up clocks and children's toys, special keys to assemble furniture. People in authority are known as key holders, and an important person within a company is known as a key player. When we want to make a specific point, we use a key word to make the task easier. We have keys on a piano and a computer. We talk about the key to success. We are given the key to the door when we are of age. We can be off key, and an event can be described as low key. These are just a few, but my absolute favourite is the key to someone's heart. What a lovely phrase. Yes, key may be a little word, but it can mean many things. Thank you, Susan. When I first read the piece, I was on tenterhooks all the way through with the will they, won't they, break their neck getting into the house drama. I'm very pleased you made a safe landing and are here to tell the tale. So that brings us to the end of today's recording. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. And we look forward to doing it all again in September. Bye.